Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Do you have a...
Yeah, he should stop. He's done.
That would be great.
We know.
Yeah. Do you have a swing stat for tonight?
I think it's fast break points. I think as I was trying to figure out how the Kings would win this game, I think it's getting stops and getting easy buckets in transition, where the Pelicans' half-court defense is going to be so set for them that they have to get as many easy looks as they can. So get steals, get live ball turnovers, and get out and get those easy buckets.
All right. Why is this such a bad... Why has this season with them played out the way that it has? Because it's not just 4-0. Like that's certainly part of the story, and that's, you know, what, you know, they'll tell you on the broadcast tonight, but like there's a 36 point loss, a 33 point loss, there's a 10 point loss. Like there are ass whoopings in this series. Yeah. Like is it really that bad?
I think so. I think it's just that the Pelicans' strengths completely offset the Kings' strengths, where it's like there's no overlap of, well, they're bad at this and the Kings are good at that. It's that they are so good at shutting down everything the Kings are good at doing that they just match up so well. And it's cliche, the long athletic teams, but I mean, I feel like it's more than that. I feel like it's their defensive game plan, not just the bodies that are out there, the way that they are able to pack the paint and get out to contest the threes, I think is a really unique thing to be able to do on defense. And a lot of times, like with the Thunder, we see they're good at one, but maybe not the other. The Pelicans somehow are good at both. I think Herb Jones is a big reason of that. Valanciunas, he's a big body. He can defend centers one-on-one. You don't have to send double teams to Sabonis. And that they have no real weakness that you can attack on defense, that they're able to defend pretty well straight up against the Kings.
Yeah. They, Herb Jones and Trey Murphy seem to just,
they're so good.
Feast on
just great role players for him.
Man.
I actually feel worse after talking to Will.
I know. I almost texted you. I was like, FYI, I'm coming on with more stats.
FYI, it's bad. It's bad. But of course, like when you're looking at the numbers for a team that you haven't beat in four tries, the numbers aren't going to be good.
Right.
When the team has beat you by 30 twice, you're not going to find anything in those numbers that's going to make you feel better about it.
Yeah.
I said, man, I think the Kings are going to show up tonight, man. I think they're going to be ready to play. They're going to be ready to compete. It's a bad matchup. It has been a bad matchup, but they're not incapable of playing with these guys.
No, definitely not.
It could be a game. Again, their defense has been really good in the last 11 games. Their offense has been terrible. I wrote an article on it today at willzystats.com. Their offense has been terrible, but their defense has been, like, in the season rankings, would be the second best defense in the league. But it's the inverse of last year. So how we always said just be average on defense, now it's just be average on offense. And
That's
it's
wild.
just flipped on its head. Yeah.
Man. Jesse can't win pocket watching and the Kings can't score. The hell has happened to all of the things we
Oh
know and
man, it's
love?
all coincided, all same timetable too.
Should I lose tomorrow?
You tomorrow?
Yeah.
You should have thrown today's game.
It's too late, Kenny. You've doomed us all.
Look, When man, you guys ask yourself who is Kings, you guys know.
No, I'm going to tell you this.
Just gotta win.
If the Kings lose tonight, you might not want to show up tomorrow. Because Jesse's right. These things have gone hand in hand. The downfall of the Tapia Celtics and the OK Lake Show Caraways.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
I don't know what the official name
That was
was.
disrespectful.
I don't know what the official name was, but man.
Maybe they should be more like me, huh? Huh? Instead of looking to blame me, maybe they should be more like me.
Maybe. Maybe they should. Oh, well. Great work with the graphic. The concerned Jesse
you.
is just a
not it's happy so I good. Lost, but the graphic was fire. I'm not gonna lie.
The graphic's pretty fun. The
Jesse,
the,
don't I've got a video saved if you fall under 500.
Oh no.
That part of me wants to
oh,
never
no.
have
Those already got stuff archived?
Oh yeah.
They've started bookmarking Jesse.
Oh snap.
Oh man. That's
so,
a gold world.
Don't lose two more.
That's what happens when you're the champ, I guess.
That
Everybody's
is cold
waiting for Buster
game.
Douglas to come along and take you out. Will, great stuff, man. Go tend to Kennedy, and we'll, buddy, we'll see you tomorrow, win or lose.
Awesome. Looking forward to it. Thanks, guys.
All right.
Take
thank
care,
you,
Will.
My man. So tomorrow's it'll be such a different conversation.
Yeah.
You got Book, you got KD, you got Brad, but you got a 2-2 series with Phoenix. So
have they played all three of them together yet? I feel like they haven't.
The last one wasn't all three of them.
Maybe
they
Maybe
lost.
The last one they lost
because they won the first two. Lost.
Well,
the...
Booker got. I mean, Bill got hurt early in that game.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
I don't think they.
He started and didn't
pulled
play
his hamstring or
yep.
something like that.
Yep.
Yeah, I haven't seen them all together this year.
Hmm.
That's a trip.
Okay, I don't care.
Let's get through today. I think
how many games have they played together? Do we know? Does anyone know off the top of their head?
This is unofficial. I'm not putting no record.
Oh
on
wow! Look at this.
But
guy.
I would.
Oh,
say
look at you. See that? Oh,
how are you fiending for pocket watching
right
games
here.
And you're the one who's on like a 9-game winning streak?
This guy right here.
I would say they probably played 38 games together.
Really? You think it's been that many?
Yeah,
30.
Because lately they've played a lot of games together, like the last 10 games or so. Let me say, no, 38 is too high. Let me take that back. 32. 32.
What was your first guess?
32.
What was your first guess?
38.
It was 39.
Oh, well, I was right.
Well, wait, no.
I would have guessed 39 as well.
No, that's Kevin. That's Kevin Durant with Brad. They gave me Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal, but they didn't give me with Devin Booker.
I think that's. It's low 30s, maybe even high 20s.
Okay, pal, you're all over the place right now.
32 is my official. 32 is my official.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to get that number. They keep giving me Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal.
I'm surprised somebody hasn't wrote that in a story yet.
Well, I'm sure they have. I just probably haven't
saying,
been
you,
tapped in. I got my own problems to
Google
deal with
it,
with my
when
team.
You, when you Google, like, how many games, somebody at the
well,
Phoenix
I'm,
Star should have talked about that already.
I was looking at StatMuse and they didn't have it for me.
Shout out StatMuse. I like StatMuse.
I mean, they're no Kings Muse, but yeah, that's good.
Nah,
remember when StatMuse got jumped last year on Twitter by Kings fans? Turned off the replies and everything for months.
Hey, Kings fans will jump somebody on the internet and make you think twice about what you're doing.
I can't find it. I quit. I don't know how to search this stuff the way you guys do. Matt George is going to join us in just a couple of minutes. I'm curious where Matt George's vibe is at today. Is he feeling good? A little nervous? Final stretch here. Starts at the Golden 1 Center tonight as it stands today. Kings could finish 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, or they could finish 10th. The good news is they can't finish 11th.
Oh,
They're going to play a postseason game.
News.
They are going to play a postseason game. And no matter what happens tonight, they'll be in the eighth seed tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Warriors play the Blazers.
That's a win.
Lakers are off. And Kings lose. All three teams have the same exact record. Mm-hmm. I believe, and I could be wrong, I didn't think it would come to this, but here we are. I believe you get three-team tie, divisional record is in play. Kings have the best – I'm sorry, the conference record is in play. Kings have the best conference record.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're all in the same division, so maybe the division record does come into play.
Well, you mean the Warriors. You said the Warriors or the Pels?
The Warriors.
Yeah, they are.
The Kings, Lakers, and Warriors. Well, either way, Kings have the best divisional record and best conference record out of those three teams.
Man, it really sucks that that
strangely, both of those teams are under 500 against the division, and the Kings are 10-6.
Every metric always goes to, like, the Kings should be better than what they are. Well, it's those stupid four games.
Has anybody brought up the Lakers' point differential is 0.4?
Oh, I saw that the other day.
Have there been long think pieces written about that?
About how unserious they
are.
Yeah.
Don't take them seriously. Their point differential is 0.4. Did that not work with the Lakers?
No, it never works with the Lakers.
Okay.
Yeah, it never works with the team that they
that's not Sacramento. Yeah, it doesn't work with the team that's not Sacramento.
I really also get frustrated with how this has played out because I think they would be in a better spot if Malik Monk was there. You know what I mean? I'm not breaking news, but like the struggles, the 1-3 road trip, you know, maybe even losing one of those Mavericks games. Since he went down, that's like a 1-2 game difference, I think. And that would also put them at 6. And now having to go into these games without Malik Monk, potentially a play-in game without Malik, and even a playoff series. I just think this team was ready to like play a different type of game and be a different type of team when he went down. And now we'll never know.
Yeah.
Securing the Bagley says 33 games.
Thank you.
For Booker, Bill, and KD, which is right by what I said, 32.
You said 38.
I changed it to 32.
Since when are we allowed to change answers?
Since I wasn't the final answer.
Shantae Caraway over here.
I can't miss right now. I'm cooking.
Well, your Fetty Wap versus Waka Flocka game is on point. As is what classic hip hop artist is going to play at about 4:15. So can't argue. I finally had to step in a complex. Something's wrong with that system.
You had that conversation.
Yeah. I was like, bro, we've talked on Fetty Wap three times in a row at 4:00. He was like, wait, really? The same song? I was like, no, it's not the same song, but it's Fetty Wap every day at 4:00. And that was that. So, I'm pretty sure we talk. Don't we talk on Fetty Wap tomorrow?
Yeah.
We already looked at it?
Yeah.
All right. So we'll end the broadcast and flip over. Hey, tune in to our 4:00 Fetty Wap.
I said, hey, what's up? Hello.
Yeah, well, get your Bruno Mars keyword and your Fetty Wap fix at 4:00 with Dilo and Casey on 102.5 KSFM.
Oh, Jesse, we had one yesterday. Something I said or did flustered him, and we had a 1320 over there. What happened? What I said?
No, Jesse was in here.
Oh, that's
you guys
right.
were talking well, yeah. about something.
No. Yeah, we were talking.
But it was bad. I can't remember what it was.
I don't even remember.
Don't remember what it was.
If you remember,
but I remember it was.
I remember exactly what it was.
Okay.
Good.
Say it during the commercial break because I cannot remember what it was.
Oh, wow. We were getting into it then.
Oh, it's going to the text. All right. But yeah, I opened because Jesse was standing here. I opened and said it's D'Lo and Casey on ESPN 1320. I think that's the third. Yeah, that's what it was. That's what it was. Yeah, that's right. You guys are jerks, man. We're going to step out. We'll come back. Matt George joins us. We'll go commercial free to the top of the 4:00 hour. We'll talk Kings basketball with the host of the Locked On Kings podcast and ABC 10 reporter. We're dealing with Casey returning on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, we're getting ready for the Sacramento Kings and the New Orleans Pelicans tonight at the Golden 1 Center.
You know, I just thought about something, though. I never did get the full rating on my Mike Brown. Out of 1 out of 10. Is it up there? Or is it more like a Stone Cold? Because we can bring Mike Brown in every day.
About it. No, we don't need to do that. Your Stone Cold's about a 3.
Mike Brown might have not worked, bro. And you know I got your
no,
back.
No, you got to – I think the thing with Mike –
You know
you
I got your back. But...
You've got to slow down. Like, especially if you're doing post-game, Mike, you got to slow down a little bit.
Matt, what do you think? Really, I just – want to say
you do know that this sounds like Draymond Green, right? You know that everything can be traced back to the Draymond Green impersonation. This is zero. It's got to go back to the drawing board. You got to work on that one some more.
Yeah, not even close.
Yeah, send no. that one back to the performance no. center.
Yeah,
you also have to clear your throat at least once an answer.
And you have to make it clear you got your ass kicked, including me. That's what you got to start with.
It starts with me.
Or you say we played our butt off. When they lose, they got their ass kicked. When they win, they played their butt off.
Just got to keep playing the right way.
No, that's not it, bro.
It's Draymond doing a Mike Brown impersonation.
I can't with you, man. Matt George with us. Matt, it's been a vibe check all day long. What's your vibe headed into tonight's game against the Pelicans?
I got to be honest with you. First off, I thought we were going to talk WrestleMania. That's what I'm here for.
Ooh.
Second off,
don't threaten me with a good time.
Well, that's all I care about because I was hoping and praying that for the first time in a month, I would have good vibes coming into D'Lo and KC, and I don't, man. It's been a month straight of visits on this show where I've been pissed off about something, whether it was the Oakland A's or the way the Sacramento Kings are playing. I'm not like, eternal optimist Matt George over here. I'm not vibing with this team right now. I don't like the way they're playing. And there's definitely alarm bells going off, but my mindset of how to approach these final three games has changed pretty dramatically from, hey, try and make a push for the 6th seed, which is still mathematically possible, or hey, maybe make a run for the 7, to man, just hold on to the 8. Don't fall to 9 because the difference between 8 and 9 is catastrophically bad. So that's, I mean, genuinely, it's almost playing defense. Get 2 out of these 3 games, and that might be enough to move you up to 7, but get 2 out of these 3 games just to keep the Warriors and Lakers away from you. That's kind of where I'm at this point.
And really, that's to lay out the scenario. That will keep you in 7-8. If you just go 2-1, that'll keep you out of 9-10. And what I believe, I'll leave this to myself. You know, I won't put nobody else in this. What I believe is get one of these next 2. I believe they're going to handle the Blazers on the last game of the season. You've got to find a way to get at least one of these next 2.
So that inlines the question, though. Does one matter? Because I don't think the Kings are in a position to where it's not like last year when we're sitting in the third seed and we're looking at, okay, who do we want the Kings to match up with in the first round? Now it's like, hey, just get there. But it's crazy that I would think that I would rather the Kings play a team with in a single elimination game with Beal, Booker, and Durant on their team over the New Orleans Pelicans. But I mean, if you want to win a game, to me, I guess it's the Suns game to bring the Suns down into that seven spot as much as possible, or try and leapfrog them and you get seven and they get eight and that you have the tiebreaker over them. I don't know. Tonight will tell a lot too, because as we know, the first four games against New Orleans have not gone well. But I also think a big problem in those first four games was physicality, and the Kings were out-muscled. They were not playing with the physicality then that they're playing with right now. So I know Brandon Ingram's not playing, and that's a bit of an outlier too, but I'm really interested to see how the Kings look against New Orleans, if it truly is a matchup nightmare, or is it just, hey, New Orleans played them physical early. The Kings weren't ready for physicality. Now physicality has been their identity over the last month.
What do you think? Is it physicality that creates such a mismatch. I'll get this talking thing down at some point, guys. I promise.
You got it.
Is it physicality that creates such a mismatch with the New Orleans Pelicans?
I think it's physicality via like length and athleticism. It's physicality on the perimeter defensively. And then it's what, I mean, the Pelicans are going to do tonight what every single team who plays the Sacramento Kings is going to do until they prove they can beat it, which is muddy the paint. Like I've said this on social media, said this on Locked On Kings. The blueprint of how to beat Sacramento is everywhere for the world to see, and it's crystal clear. You pack the paint, you muddy the paint, you force them to beat you on the perimeter. If they do that, great. Maybe they can do that on a one-night basis. I don't think they're going to be able to do that four times in a playoff series. Mm-hmm. So the way you beat Sacramento is perfectly clear. And New Orleans is one of the teams that originally figured that out, but they were able to do so because they have these lengthy, athletic, versatile defenders who can switch and can rotate, and they're hard to create mismatches for. Compared to like the Rockets, for example, I think the Rockets and the Knicks to some extent just out physicaled Sacramento without the mismatch. I think there could be the worst of both worlds, the physicality and the athleticism and length mismatch that New Orleans has that Sacramento just has not had an answer for because they don't have the size to answer it. Like, I love the way that the Kings are playing with their three guard lineups right now. And again, I know Brandon Ingram's not playing, so maybe this game won't be accurate to how a play-in game or playoff series between these two teams would go. But as great as Davion Mitchell has been looking as of late and Keon Ellis has been playing as of late, I still worry about how you deal with the overall length of New Orleans, because it's Keegan Murray, it's Harrison Barnes, and then it's Sasha Vezenkov. Like, that Sacramento just doesn't have the bodies to be able to play that way.
You said you're a little down on this team right now. What specifically, in, let's just go with the game on Tuesday, did you not like? I mean, was it the over reliance on the three ball? Was it Sabonis's lack of production? Like, is it a combination of all things above? What had you not really feeling how this team is playing right now?
I think Tuesday was the cherry on top of the feelings that I've had and processed all season long, which is the primary strength of this Kings team is not reliable, and that's the offense. The Kings offense just is not reliable. And to some extent, yes, missing a starter and missing your sixth man of the year, I shouldn't say to some extent, to a large extent, that's a big part of it, right? And we know how Malik Monk's not just the sixth man of the year. Malik Monk's not just your first guy off your bench. Malik Monk is your third best player and your second best creator. So that's a massive thing to lose. That being said, Sacramento's inconsistent and unreliable offense has been a problem all season long, not just since those two guys got hurt. I get if Kevin Huerter was playing, you'd have a better three-point option, but Kevin Huerter has gone through more peaks and valleys this season than anybody else on the roster in terms of his shooting. So I'm not convinced that had Malik and Kevin been playing, that Sacramento wouldn't still be over-reliant on the three-point shot like they've been so far this season. I do think DeMontis Sabonis' production offensively, especially around the rim, would be better directly playing with Malik, which just speaks to how great of a playmaker and a two-man game that Malik and Domas and Malik and any big has. But 26 points in the paint is absolutely unacceptable. 58 three-point attempts is absolutely unacceptable. And once again, you had a bad defensive quarter. You gave up, what, 39 points in the third quarter, right? That's a bad defensive quarter. That's not the reason you lost the game. You lost the game because you scored 41 points in the second half. You scored 18 points in the fourth quarter. Game was tied, multiple possessions down the stretch where you didn't even touch the paint and you chucked up two threes, one of them contested by De'Aaron, the other one early in the shot clock by De'Aaron. Sacramento's offensive execution is poor right now. They're over-reliant on the three-point shot. They have no interior presence, which I put on Domantas Sabonis first and foremost, even as captain defend a Sabonis over here, the guy that will step in front of Sabonis with everything. Sabonis has not been nearly good enough since Malik Monk has been down. The lack of interior presence, I think, is a game plan issue, but it starts with your big, your all-NBA center not having any interior presence to begin with. So I think Sacramento's offense is fundamentally flawed right now, and that's supposed to be your biggest strength, to where your defense is playing well enough to win you basketball games and you're struggling to score 110 points. This is the team that last season was scoring 120 in their sleep. I get Mike Brown is saying, hey, I don't want to be the team that has to rely on scoring 120 points a night to win anymore. And you know what? They're not, which is good. They can win a game that's 110 to 109. They can do that. But this Kings team, in a way, he's like handicapping himself or undermining himself, because you don't want to be reliant on 120 points to win, but you're completely reliant on your 3-point shot to consistently score. So I just think it's offensively, you're fundamentally flawed.
Can you fix that with your current crop of players, or is that just something like this is what it is because of what's available for them?
I mean, I feel like the time for fixing is over. Right, you're 3 games left in the season, then you're going into a single elimination or hopefully double an elimination play-in round if you secure a 7th or 8th spot. I think, D'Lo, I think you said it yesterday. The faith in this Kings team to win one game and get in, yeah. But this Kings team right now is not built to win a playoff series. And they had no really hope to win a playoff series, in my opinion, as soon as they lost Malik Monk. Mm-hmm. That being said, like, again, it's oversimplifying it. And I think Jesse pointed this out yesterday, too. It's oversimplifying it to say you need just more from Domantas Sabonis. But that's where it's got to start. Like, you can't have these games where Domantas Sabonis is going 2 of 7. Like, I'd rather him go 2 of 14, but try and attack the basket and try and score and try and establish yourself inside, because defenses, again, are setting up to muddy the paint. They are game planning specifically to harass and bother Domas and not let the Kings get looks at the rim. But by only chucking threes, I think you're playing right into that. You're not forcing them to adjust. They're giving up these open looks, and thank God you had Keon Ellis, who is capable of hitting 8 threes. Keon Ellis should never be shooting 15 threes in a game, even if he is white hot. He should not. And the fact that you got 8 threes out of Keon Ellis and lost, not just that, you got 8 threes out of Keon Ellis and still scored only 105 points, and that included 7 threes out of De'Aaron Fox. You made 20 threes in a game, and you only scored 105 points. That's the problem. And I think, it's oversimplifying it, but it starts with Domas. It starts with him going, okay, you're going to double and triple team me. I'm going to fight through it. Or for God's sake, someone cut, someone go back door, somebody do something to get you something around the rim so that you're not just working the ball around the perimeter and chucking it up. Because exactly what happened on Tuesday, I think, is the blueprint. Maybe the Kings will be hot for a quarter. Maybe they'll be hot for a half. This team has not been able to consistently string together 3 to 4 quarters of hot shooting more than a flash in a pan every once in a while. Every team in the league knows it, and that's why they're game planning that way against Sacramento.
Yeah, I mean, and what you're saying is 100% right, and that kind of comes down to your personnel, right? Like, that's something that it can't really change. It can't change at all right now because of the injuries and where we're at in the season. The only thing that I would say, and I think 58 threes is too much. You know, if you told me coming into the game they're going to shoot 58 threes, I'm like, I wish they would have shot less than that. I know I want them to get them up, but that's a little too much even for me. But the only thing that I'll say is you're getting wide open looks for the likes of Keegan Murray, Trey Lyles, you know, even Harrison on a corner three. I mean, this is why in the half court, this is why you run an offense to get wide open looks. And I'm with Mike Brown in that I don't get too caught up on the number. I just want the shots to be open, and I want you to be aggressive in taking them. And if that means 68 tonight, as long as they're open, shoot the ball. You know, Domas, I mean, it sounds good to be like, hey, even against double and triple teams, just go up, Domas. That's a crazy shot. Like, if they're triple teaming you and Keegan Murray's open in the corner, pass him the ball. You know what I mean?
Here's the thing, Kenny, that I agree with some of what you're saying, but the problem is, if that's what Mike Brown wants, if what you said is exactly what Mike Brown wants, the problem is that's what the opposing team wants too. Your head coach and the opposing team's head coach want the same exact thing. Chuck threes. Show us you can beat us from the perimeter, because nobody believes the Kings can do it consistently. Because even when they were at full strength, they have not been able to do it consistently. On paper, this is a team that is loaded with three-point weapons that have the hardest time in the world of being on at the same time. Again, you have nights, you have flashes in the pan where the Kings, we've seen, score 120 points. They look unbeatable. It's like, here are the Kings from last season. But that's not consistent enough. And that's what teams have caught on to. And teams are not just daring Keon Ellis to beat them, not just daring De'Aaron Fox to outshoot them from the perimeter. Teams are daring the entire Sacramento Kings team. Go ahead, hit 23s in a game. We think we can beat you when you make 23-pointers, which is a crazy statement to say in its own right. Again,
they're usually
like,
wrong with that, though.
I'm sorry?
They're usually wrong with that. They're like, that was an anomaly. They're like, I don't know. What's the record when they have 15 or more?
Well, the problem wasn't 20, though. That's what we, like, the problem wasn't 20. It was the 58. Mm-hmm. Normally, it's 20 out of 45. Mm-hmm. That's very different. 20 out of 58 mm-hmm. is, that means it ate up such a high bulk of your offensive possessions. You had a lot of, I mean, just on that alone, you had 38 empty offensive possessions.
Yeah.
The craziest number from that game is you made 23-pointers and shot 34% from three. That's insanity. If you're making 23-pointers, you should be flirting with 50. And that's what we've seen most of the time. If a team, and that's what teams have done in Sacramento against the Kings far too often this season. The Kings have given up 15 to 23-pointers a handful of times. And you look at the scoreboard and it's like, oh, the Pelicans are shooting 55%. Hell, I think CJ McCollum did that last time the Pelicans were in Sacramento. Yeah. So there's a very big difference between 50% from the three-point line with 15 threes, or let's say 45% from three with 15 threes versus 34% with 20 threes. Well, it's not a good ratio.
The second craziest number with that as well, Matt, is 20 threes and you only got 105 points.
Mm.
Like, that's exactly. That's the crazy point. You hit 23s, you're thinking you're getting 115, 120. I mean, they fought and clawed to get to 105 with hitting 23s. And that's something that was perplexing.
And that's where we're on the same page, Kenny, because to me, defensively, this team has absolutely improved. And I'm in a twilight zone because I trust the defense more than the offense right now, which I never thought I'd ever say for Sacramento. But the offense is the bread and butter of this team. The offense is, okay, you're in a slugfest game seven, single elimination, close game down the stretch. You're going to turn to what you know, which is outscoring your opponent. Go and get me a bucket. And I don't trust this Kings team to be able to do that consistently at this point, to get out of the play-in, let alone get into in a playoff series. That's where it's at. I don't think this team has a strength right now, or a consistent, reliable strength. They have what they should be good at that they haven't been good at, and a clear blueprint of how to beat them. And every team is aware of it, and every team is executing it well against Sacramento at this point. I mean, two 20-point leads blown in the same road trip because of the exact same kind of first half shooting, second half slump performance should tell you everything you need to know. Every team's doing the same thing, and it's working.
Kings have hit 23-pointers this season 8 times. They are 6-2 in those games. Another interesting note, they shot 50-plus three-pointers 3 times this season.
That's a trip.
They're 1-2 in those games. They lost to Boston when they were 17-51. They beat Utah when they were 19-51. And then, of course, they were 20-58 a couple of nights ago against Oklahoma City.
The Kings are 3rd in three-point attempts per game as a team, and they're 16th in three-point shooting percentage. Towards the top of the league and getting them up, but below average technically, or in the bottom half in hitting them. And that's all season long. That's not just over the stretch of games without Monk and Herter.
I'm falling down a rabbit hole. You might have lost me. I'm looking at, like, cause I'm looking at their, the 15 plus number, and I'm trying to look at the percentage. That's a difficult thing to do during a live radio show. I don't think I'm going to be able to pull this off the way I wanted to. I can tell you because this is easy to see. They shoot. This is obviously a stunning number, especially given the stats Matt just gave us about how much they shoot them. You get 48.5% they win. There's seven games they've shot 48.5% or more. They win those games.
Yeah, 7-0.
And you're shooting nearly 50% from three. You're probably going to win.
Absolutely. And the thing that I always say about this entire thing is, and once again, I get 58 is a lot. That is not what the game plan would be for me, is to shoot 58. But you're in the fourth quarter, and it's a tie game. Me and Mike Brown are not going to say, well, guys, we're at 53s taken today. Don't take any more, because you know that's just, it's getting crazy now. Like, no, shoot the open shot and don't hesitate. That's all I'm ever saying, is if you're open, whether it's a triple team or maybe, you know, offensive rebound, kick it out. I want the guys to shoot with confidence, because that's the other way we're going to win. I don't want anybody petrified or worrying about little stuff when they're shooting. Shoot with confidence. And what you deem is a confident open look, I need you guys to become, because we don't have a plan B right now as far as like, oh, we'll just get it to the ultimate confident guy in Malik Monk. I need these guys to all play with confidence. That's all I'm saying with it.
See, and I agree with that completely too. The only problems that I have with that, two of them. Number one, this roster isn't consistently good enough to I think execute that at this point, which is, like you said earlier, a personnel problem. And number two is, at least specifically on Tuesday, they didn't take confident open looks down the stretch. They took early in the shot clock or contested three-point look. Now, De'Aaron Fox had a phenomenal game, went toe-to-toe with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, so I'm not trying to knock the night that he had, but De'Aaron Fox was not good down the stretch. The Kings weren't good down the stretch. They scored 18 points in the freaking fourth quarter. So, like, it's you can nitpick and point to different things. We could also talk about free throw shooting. We could talk about so many different things, or Shai Gilgeous-Alexander getting to the line 20 times. One of the reasons why that happens is because Shai leads the league in drives. He's number one in the league in drives. De'Aaron Fox is number 12. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander shoots over 40% of his shot attempts, period, from within 10 feet. De'Aaron Fox is down to like 34-35%. So I'm not saying that if Fox went in amongst the trees down there that he'd get as many calls as Shai, because we know that's not going to happen, because we know Shai likes to throw his head back and he gets the star treatment that for some reason De'Aaron Fox just does not get, and I don't understand why.
He hasn't been anointed by the media, Matt. That's why. You have to be anointed by Brian Windhorst in order to get the foul call, and we all know how much Brian hates De'Aaron.
And he has to fall.
Yeah. You brought up a couple of – I'm sorry, Matt. Continue.
No, that's it. I'm good.
You brought up a couple of things there. You mentioned free throw shooting. You mentioned three-point defense. Matt, what month is this? Like, I mean, aren't we talking about – didn't we have this conversation at Christmas?
It's the same thing.
And then at Valentine's Day. And then
it's the same thing all season.
The issues that have plagued the Kings are plaguing the Kings.
Huh? This team has shown exactly who they are all season long, and the problem is everybody has caught on. And the same way that we see Mike Brown getting criticism or the Kings struggling with halftime adjustments is the same way we've seen them struggling with second half of the season adjustments. The biggest change for Sacramento this season has been defense on the defensive end, especially over the last month and some change, let's say since the All-Star break. A lot of people credit that to or point to how games are being officiated and more physicality is being allowed in the second half of the season for why Sacramento is having success. I think that short changes the Kings a little bit too, because like I just said, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander got to the line 20 times. The other night, Luka Doncic got to the line more than the entire Sacramento Kings team, with them playing a good physical brand of defense. So I'm not fully buying into, oh, the refs are just letting the Kings play a little more. I think the Kings have bought into playing a physical, aggressive style of defense. And on top of that, I think they're willing to give their effort and give their all. I'm not questioning effort one bit with this team. I'm questioning game plan, and I'm questioning execution of that game plan. Defensively, the game plan is working. The effort is there. Offensively, the effort is there. The game plan is lacking, and that has this team in a really, really tough spot.
I think Matt speaks more for like the people in the chat more than I do. It seems like people are disgusted with this team. That's what it sounds like. And that's – I don't see them that way. I see them as a team that going to finish around 12, 13 games over 500. The West is played everything that Hollinger said. You know, the West has played better. These teams have stepped up in the Western Conference. And the Kings left some games out there, probably three, four games out there, which would have had them in a better record. But I think the
emotional reaction to games where you lead by 20 and lose is a little different than a game that you stand in the middle of the ring and have a heavyweight fight with and you lose at the end, or a game that you just get blown out from. Experienced those. Like I think part of the feeling is, you know, it's postseason time. Like, it's very literally the postseason right now. To lose two 20-point leads in the span of like 4 or 5 days and feeling like, man, how much different would things be if we didn't lose that lead? All right, you got bailed out. Phoenix lost. Move on to the next one. And then like two games later, you do it again. It's not just the loss. It's the way the loss looked. And I think that's what got people in a little of a frustrated
Say that you also have to have context. No disrespect to the man, but they're like, Kobe Jones, save us. Like, that's tough. Kobe Jones played good against the Nets. Let's put him back out there against the Thunder. This guy was in the G League playoffs 2 weeks ago.
I don't disagree with that whatsoever, but I'll try to give the other perspective as well. You built a 20-point lead. You were doing something.
Mm-hmm.
Davion was doing something. De'Aaron was – somebody was doing something, and then it stopped.
Also, here's my counter to that.
But I don't know. I'm just guessing. I have no idea. I'm just telling you how I feel. Go ahead, Matt. Sorry.
My counter to that, too, is, you're in a position where you're saying, Kobe Jones, save us, because you didn't do anything to upgrade your roster and try and add some contingency plans. Meanwhile, you have the Dallas Mavericks, who are arguably the hottest team in basketball, who beat you, stole your spot, and have now blazed past you because they're a completely different team since the moves they made at the trade deadline. Now, it's easy to say from my position, because I'm not in the war room with Monty and I'm not on the phone with him. I don't know what he had available to him versus what Dallas had available to him. But now you have a track record with Monty, who I am a full supporter of. Trade deadline last year didn't do anything. I was okay with it at the time. Offseason didn't do anything. Ran it back. I understood it at the time. I actually supported it at the time. It hasn't really worked. Trade deadline again. You sat on your hands while other teams got better around you, and now those are the teams that you are directly competing with, and all of them have passed you at this point in time, with the exception of maybe Phoenix. So you've put yourself in this position, and I think that's where my frustration comes from is, first off, and I said this a million times, I am in a position, as are many Sacramento Kings fans, where this is the first year after the Kings have been good, and we have no idea what to expect. We have no clue. Mike Brown does, because he's been here before. Kings fans are like, okay, we made the playoffs. We were a third seed last year. Aren't we supposed to just keep getting better? A lot of it is taken with a grain of salt, because this is new for all of us here in Sacramento. But at the same time, it's like my frustration with this is it feels like a lost year, or it feels like a wasted year, unless you do something this offseason, which to me, if I'm wrapping this season up in a bow at this point to salvage it, what it has to be is this was the year where, for lack of a better term, you separated the boys from the men. This is the year where you're like, I know my guys. I know who's in. I know who I can win a championship with, and I know who I'm not. And I think we've seen that group separate themselves. Now that message has been sent from Mike Brown to Monty McNair in this front office of, y'all know we need Monk back. Y'all know Fox, Sabonis, Keegan. We got this group here. We have other guys that could be fringe, like a Keon or a Davion. We got Kevin. We got Harrison. We got guys on the other side. So this season, to me, is about, okay, you had that great year. You ran it back. You saw your weaknesses that go beyond just health, right? It wasn't just that you got injured this season as to why you're in this position. You have not played your best basketball more than a handful of times over the course of this year. You've improved in areas you've wanted to improve. You've regressed in significant areas that even the general manager brought up in his post-trade deadline press conference on the offense. So to me, it's this year was about finding out what's real and what isn't about that fun light the beam year that we had last year. Now, how do you build upon it? So the final grade for this season probably isn't going to be released or put out or set in stone until what happens this offseason. But if Monty doesn't do that, if the Kings don't take what they learned from this year and build upon it and make moves this offseason, it's hard to not feel like this was a wasted year in some ways.
That was a lot. I think I disagree with the, well, you know what, Matt? Tell us about WrestleMania. I want you to go into tonight's game feeling good, and I know wrestling will make you happy, Matt. How happy were you this weekend, or how upset were you? Kenny was crying because the Tribal Chief era's over. He didn't want Cody to finish his story. He wanted a 2.5 kick out. Did you enjoy the weekend?
I did. No, I thought Sunday night was fantastic. Just banger after banger after banger. I'm with Kenny though. I like Roman, and I'm not really a Cody believer. I mean, it was uber babyface versus uber heel, and the uber babyface won. You got your happy ending, and I loved the execution of it. Didn't like the
at
result,
its crux. That's what professional wrestling is.
Yeah,
good versus evil, and on the biggest stage of them all, more times than not, you want to send 80,000 people home happy.
Yeah, so I wanted Roman to keep going because I don't believe Cody is the one to beat Roman after all the people that Roman has beaten, but that's just me being a grumpy old man about it. But I thought the show was fantastic. I think the fact that they lean so heavily into the Paul Levesque Triple H era, I love, because they're really making it clear this is where we're going now. And then on your first real opportunity to prove it, you have not just the main event going the way that it does. You have all of these storylines being played out or created, or like you have payoff from 10 years of a Shield betrayal there's so many little things that are just like, this is where Triple H is different from He Who Shall Not Be Named.
Redacted.
I will say this though. The best part of the entire weekend was Paul Heyman's Hall of Fame speech.
It was very good.
That Hall of Fame speech was fantastic.
Yep.
And I'm a massive Paul Heyman guy. So.
Yeah.
So, you know, one thing I saw about that I didn't realize is some people were really critical of that because it opened the show and they showed a lot of people left after that. So these other Hall of Famers didn't get, you know, I saw a video, a lot of empty seats after Heyman. And I would have probably booked it the same way of having Heyman start and have that energy, but I wouldn't have thought about like, oh, people are going to leave after this.
I didn't like it either. I was actually really confused by it because I had no desire to see anything else except Paul Heyman. Mm. And then a notification came up, well, Paul with the ECW stuff on. I was like, this just started. Mm. He went first. Mm. They they ran a little bit of a angle with Rock stuff at the end. Mm. And so it was like, all right, Rock had to get his stupid ass title from Muhammad Ali's widow and then do the speech, you know, for his grandmother.
Yeah.
I thought it was weird that Paul opened too in Philadelphia. Yeah. But
I loved the speech and everything. I didn't even think about that. Like when it happened, I was just like, yeah, this is great. And then when I saw the video afterwards, I was like, oh man, that's right. They probably would have left after that. So
yeah, when Paul was done, I immediately went to Google and I was like, who is this Hall of Fame class? Because I was like, I guess Paul's not the headliner. There must be a banger of a headline. And I thought, okay, it was gonna be Bray Wyatt. And then they didn't do an homage to Bray until like WrestleMania.
No, they did. They did. Mike Rotunda
did do it.
I actually thought that was the sweetest part. Not the actual one. I think they were. I love the fact that Bray's dad, Mike Rotunda, they wanted to do something for Bray and they were going to have a call to action to it, but the crowd was already doing it and it was the thing with the lights. But my favorite part, I just found this so freaking charming, was Mike is breaking down. He's talking about his son, obviously. Barry's with him. He's known Barry Windham for 40 plus years. Bray's named after Barry. And, you know, Barry sees Mike struggling and he's trying to help Mike find the flashlight on his phone. I just thought it was the sweetest thing because the mic picks it up. He's like, come on, we'll do it. Yeah. We'll do it. And he's like, nope, down here in the corner. Press that button down there in the corner. It was just the sweetest, like, old man technology type thing where the old buddy is trying to help you navigate this new damn iPhone thing. And he gets the flashlight on and he holds it up for Bray and they darken the lights. I thought it was sweet, the interaction between those two, and obviously a great tribute to Bray White, who, like, if you paid attention to the documentary and even some things over the weekend, was just so incredibly close with Triple H. Really,
the other thing about that weekend, did you see the footage of Seth barely able to get in the ring for his Shield? Look like
no, I saw it when he got. I didn't see him getting in. I saw him getting out.
Yeah, he barely got in.
Yeah, he could not move when he left on Sunday night.
Like literally, got up there, collected himself, got speared, and got out.
That's probably why they did it the way that they did. Yeah. Like he gets in the ring, and I think Roman laid him out to protect Rock. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as he gets to his feet, Roman lays him out.
Yeah, I wonder how long that's.
They said 4 weeks, but man, he it didn't look like when it. They showed him walk into the back, he was in tough shape. Mm. He really gutted this program out to make it work. Sorry, Matt.
No, I thought the CM Punk and Drew McIntyre, everything that they're doing is working really, really well. Although I hope it doesn't take us too far away from the CM Punk Seth Rollins that they still have to put a bow on, because I know those two genuinely don't like each other. I did think it was a little weird having all of the biggest baby faces in the company come out and celebrate Cody at the end of beating Roman. I was like, okay, it was like,
well,
they didn't do that for Daniel Bryan.
Well,
Daniel
Bryan, but they didn't. And that's the Roman part. That's Roman has been champion for 4 years. Daniel Bryan beat, was it Randy Orton? And Batista, Randy Orton had been champion for a couple months. Like, there wasn't a lot of meaning behind it. Remember when Hogan beat Sting? Or flip that, when Sting beat Hogan, the babyfaces came out. Yeah. Remember when Brett beat Yokozuna at 10? All of the babyfaces came out. I liked it. I thought it was okay. I thought it was also a
callback to that moment with Dusty when he
sure.
When he won and everybody came out
against Flair. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
That feels forced, but okay. All right.
I'm with Matt on this one. I'm not the biggest Cody guy.
Yeah, you've been hating on Cody. You've been a Cody hater from jump.
I still like my story of Jay winning.
Well, Jay couldn't even have a good match at WrestleMania, so it was the worst match of the weekend. It was really disappointing. I thought your story was working. I thought they did a good. I thought they set it up real nicely. Cody's the right one. Now the problem now is like you had to end that story the right way. Now the problem is you've got to make it matter for Cody. Yeah. What's next?
You got to
make
it off TV.
It's tough. You got it. It's like the Kings. Kings win tonight, man. That would be awesome. Cool. What's tomorrow? Yeah. It's always what's next. So let's start with a dub tonight, Matt. We appreciate you as always. Make sure you're. Subscribe to the Locked On Kings podcast. We'll run it back next on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320.
Vamos, Kings, light the beam.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.